It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
While the shooter was the one who entered the high school and pulled the trigger, there are other individuals who contributed to this, to the events on November 30th, and it's my intention to hold them accountable as well. It's imperative we prevent this from happening again.
That is Karen McDonald. She is the prosecutor in Oakland County, Michigan, where a 15-year-old is charged with murdering four of his classmates this week at the local high school, and where his parents now face manslaughter charges as well. And this is the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday, where we open up the phone lines, and if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers go first at 866-439-5277. Emails all goes straight to me, talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can vote in our Twitter poll anytime you like. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk for the past 21-plus years. Now, I can't count the number of times that when a child has been involved in a murder, and folks call me up to ask, why aren't the parents facing charges? And in so many cases, the law does not allow them to be charged with a crime. Your state lawmakers could fix that. Karen McDonald pointed out she is not going to let the opportunity go by to find the people who are involved, not just 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly, but his parents as well. Listen to what she announced just a few hours ago.
Based on the information and evidence I have received, today I am announcing charges against the shooter's parents, Jennifer and James Crumbly. The charges are as follows. James Crumbly is charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Jennifer Crumbly is also charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter.
Now, I understand that the knee-jerk reaction of many of us in the Second Amendment community, those like me who own a gun, who carry guns, who've owned guns most of our lives, might be to say, now hold on a second, can you actually say the parents were responsible? But this one in particular, based on what the prosecutor explained, as I said, just a few hours ago, seems like a perfect example of adults who acted like idiots and did not use common sense and lives were lost. And I would include in that not just the two parents of Ethan Crumbly, but also some of the school officials. But let me get to that in a moment. The adult parents of Ethan Crumbly, the adults at the school who failed to take common sense steps that would have saved at least four lives this week. Now, let's go over what we know. On the Friday after Thanksgiving, Ethan Crumbly's father took him to a gun store and bought a gun and told the teen it was a Christmas present. Now, if you're not familiar with the gun laws throughout the United States, the federal gun laws, limit who can buy a pistol like this one. They also say that when you buy it, you have to say on the form and sign your name under penalty of perjury or false swearing that you are buying the gun for yourself, not for somebody else. Now, you can tell a child, I'm buying the gun for you. We're going to call it your gun, but legally, it is my gun, the adult's gun, and I'm going to retain control of it until you're old enough to take on that responsibility, both legally and otherwise. Well, Crumbly's father took him to a gun store, bought the gun, told his teenage son it was a Christmas present. That is fine as far as it goes. But then his father did not lock up the gun and clearly did not enforce a rule that the gun was not to be used by the 15-year-old without adult permission and without adults present. Again, go back to Karen McDonald in Michigan.
One of Jennifer Crumbly's social media posts on about 11/27/21 read, quote, Mom and Sunday testing out his new Christmas present, end quote. On November 21st, 21, a teacher at the Oxford High School observed Ethan Crumbly searching ammunition on his cell phone during class and reported the same to school officials. Jennifer Crumbly was contacted via voicemail by school personnel regarding that son's inappropriate internet search. School personnel indicate they followed that voicemail up with an email but received no response from either parent.
Now, that's fine. At that point, you're saying the kid is just searching on the internet for ammunition. It is not a crime. But on Tuesday of this week, the morning of the shooting that took at least four lives, Ethan Crumbly's teacher saw a drawing on Ethan's desk. And she was alarmed to the point where she took a picture of it with her phone. The note contained the following, a drawing of a semi-automatic handgun pointed at the words, "The thoughts won't stop, help me." In another section of the note was a drawing of a bullet with the following words about the bullet, "Blood everywhere." Between the drawing of the gun and the bullet is a drawing of a person who appears to have been shot twice and is bleeding. And below that figure is the drawing of a laughing emoji. Further down the drawing are the words, "My life is useless." And to the right of those words are the words, "The world is dead." So what did the school do? They immediately called the parents to an immediate meeting at 10 a.m. that morning, Tuesday morning this week, and brought Ethan to the office. He had a backpack with him. Listen again to Prosecutor Karen McDonald.
At the meeting, James and Jennifer Crumbly were shown the drawing and were advised that they were required to get their son into counseling within 48 hours. Both James and Jennifer Crumbly failed to ask their son if he had his gun with him or where his gun was located, and failed to inspect his backpack for the presence of the gun, which he had with him. James and Jennifer Crumbly resisted the idea of them leaving the school at that time, of their son leaving the school at that time. Instead, James and Jennifer Crumbly left the high school without their son.
Now, the prosecutor was absolutely right to call out the parents' failure to find out where is the gun, is the gun in the backpack, is the gun still at our home? But school officials should have done the very same thing. They could have asked Ethan Crumbly to show them what was in his backpack voluntarily. No Fourth Amendment issue there. They could say, "We'd like you to voluntarily show us what's in your backpack." If Ethan Crumbly then refused, the school officials could have said to his parents, "That backpack and whatever might be in it belongs to you. You're the parents." If they then refused to look, then Ethan Crumbly and his parents could have been escorted off school property together. If a gun was found in the backpack, that's a violation of a number of laws, including concealed carry by a minor and a gun on school property. Again, go back to Karen McDonald.
When the news of the active shooter at Oxford High School had been made public, Jennifer Crumbly texted to her son at 1:22 p.m., quote, "Ethan, don't do it," end quote. At 1:37 p.m., James Crumbly called 911, reporting that a gun was missing from his house, and he believed his son may be the shooter.
Well, guess what now? The parents have been charged, and you know what's happening right now? The parents are on the run. There is a manhunt underway to try to find the parents who today, the charges were announced that they will be charged with involuntary manslaughter, four counts each. And they have apparently disappeared. The police are now searching for them. I think this is an object lesson for every single parent, everybody who owns a gun, and every single school official. The school officials failed to do what they could have done. I just explained what they could have done. They could have said, "We'd like to see what's in the backpack." And if Ethan said no, turn to the parents and say, "He's not going to show you what's in the backpack. Does that tell you that the gun may be in the backpack? We would like you to look in the backpack since you officially, as parents, own that backpack. And if there's a gun in there, you own the gun as well." They didn't do it. And the parents, they also failed to act and they deserve to be charged. But school officials, everybody, everywhere should take a lesson from this. Coming up, the Northwest Nonsense.
Hey there, it's Lars.
And your phone calls right here on the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
5 years ago, Donald Trump warned Americans we'd be winning so much we'd get tired of winning. And we all laughed at the idea that we could have so much success we'd actually get tired of it. And when we did, self-sufficient for energy nationwide, foreign jobs coming back home, the lowest unemployment rate in American history for every single demographic, including problematic demographics like Black and Hispanic Americans, tough measures on China and Iran and Russia and North Korea. And here we are 10 months into Joe Biden. Are you tired of losing yet? I mean, before we even mention Afghanistan, more people have died of COVID this year than they did in all of last year. We hit that grim milestone this week. That despite the fact that Biden arrived January 20th with three vaccines, good treatments, and a much deeper knowledge of the disease that his China buddies grew in that Wuhan lab. America under Biden is an oil beggar state, pleading with Arab sheikhs and Vladimir Putin of Russia for a few more barrels that we could produce here at home. Joe would rather your dollars at the pump go to foreign dictators than back into America's economy. Speaking of which, how's the holiday season treating you now with inflation running at a 30-year high? And today's jobs report kind of missed the mark. 600,000 new jobs were predicted. The economy produced barely a third of that. And the worst jobs report of the Biden economy. But just wait, there's more than 3 years left to it. And don't worry, Congress plans to shovel out more borrowed money. Are you tired of losing yet? Paul French writes in on Getter Lars, a glimpse into the near future if the Democrats are not stopped. Remember when we used to keep our house so warm that we didn't have to wear winter coats and hats and gloves and you couldn't see your breath indoors? Remember when we used to drive our car places instead of having to ride a bike all day long to get just a few miles? And our question of the day comes in from Steve and Eugene. Hey, Lars, is there some other reason other than being the president's son that Hunter Biden is not being federally charged and prosecuted for lying on the ATF form 4473? Thanks, Steve. Well, 4473, if you don't recognize that, you've not bought a gun, because that's the form every single person in America has to fill out to purchase a firearm. And on that, if you lie, it's called false swearing. Well, Hunter Biden did exactly that. He lied on the ATF form. That is a federal felony. And no, he's not being prosecuted by the Biden DOJ. You can only ask yourself why. Because maybe if he was prosecuted, he'd spill the beans on the deal that his dad got from the Chi-Coms and the mayor of Moscow and the folks in the Ukraine. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
On this First Amendment Friday, I'm going to give the grill today to the city of Portland that plans to give out $1.3 million in emergency assistance. And who is this assistance going to? Is it going to orphanages or poor children? No, it's going to the marijuana industry. And oh, by the way, the program is going to prioritize color, women, low-wage earners, and other historically disadvantaged populations. So if you're a white cis male, good luck trying to apply for it. Today's email, best email so far, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Always brought to you by Rivers City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. Now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and signing bonuses. Online at RiversCityUSA.com/career. Peter writes, and Lars, I get where you're coming from about teachers' unions being responsible for failing schools. Parents have realized they need a much bigger role in their child's education than when you and I were in school. We raised a child kind of late. I was 47. The schools were small, without many resources, but mercifully not terribly woke. My father taught him to read, and I taught him math, history, and writing, plus real-world mentoring. We taught him to be independent and self-reliant. At 12, he announced his two interests, private space development and IT. At 21, with no college, he took up Russia's motto that in America, not Russia, but Russia's motto, that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. Elon Musk hired him to be the IT launch crew on the IT launch crew at Cape Canaveral, responsible for all launch, recovery, test, and spacecraft systems on the pad. His team's also responsible for all the IT hardware, so my son is everywhere seeing everything. There are only 25 of what he does in a company of 10,000. Hooray for self-learning. We are analog parents with no connections to the space biz. Parents take nothing for granted when it comes to education, much less the potential of your child. Great work on your part, signed Peter. Peter, thank you so much for that. It's unusual to get a naysayer this early in the day, but Tobin is on the line, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our friends at KPNW. Hey, Tobin, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars. So something he said a few moments ago, not as much of a naysayer, longtime listener, but more wanted to play devil's advocate.
Sure,
and,
of course.
I've learned a lesson again and again that not everything's as it seems, and I hope that many people learn that with Kyle Rittenhouse. So with this thing in Michigan, a moment ago, you suggested that there's a lesson to be learned here for people like you and I. I have a son in his early 20s. We have sons in their teenagers. We've always been pro-Second Amendment. Our children have had BB guns since, you know, very little ages, 22s. So to play devil's advocate,
sure.
What's the lesson? What's the nugget for us parents who have healthy children or children who appear you know, to be healthy, which was, what's the lesson? That's my...
Okay, the lesson would be this. If you have a firearm, it is your firearm. You're the adult. You're the only one allowed to buy one. You're only the only one allowed to own one. That is true in most states in America. There are some exceptions for 18-year-olds in some states and shotguns versus long guns and pistols and all that. But without right. getting into the details, you're the adult. You bought the gun. When the child is old enough to own the gun and you want to transfer the ownership, by all means, do so. I'd be happy with that. I also know there are parents who have some experience with their kids and guns, and they've come to find out that the child can be trusted with the gun. Now, not by themselves, but you might say, I've got a 17-year-old son. He's always done reliably when it comes to gun safety and everything else. If you say, I'm going to let him go out and shoot, you know, at targets in the backyard, if you've got a big enough backyard, that's fine. In this case, a father goes down and buys a pistol. He tells his son it's his pistol. Mom tells him it's his pistol. They do not lock it up. They have no experience with them. But they get a really clear warning sign. The school says, hey, he's shopping for ammunition online on his phone at the school. Are you concerned about this? And then when they call him in the second time and say, listen, he's drawing these weirdo drawings about death and the end of the world and it's not worth it anymore. Somebody please stop me. All this stuff. Wouldn't you, as the parent, have said to your son, where's your gun right now? And if your son says, I don't know, say, I want you to empty your backpack right now. Now, the school should have asked for that, too. But the parents should have asked for it. It tells me they don't have any common sense. Does that not suggest that to you?
No, I absolutely agree. The shopping for ammunition, I think there's a place and a time for everything. He probably shouldn't have been doing that at school. Probably not.
But it's not a crime. It's not a crime. Right, it's curiosity. If you had a new car, you might be shopping for car parts. But doing it at school and parents getting the warning, I would think at that point, dad would say, if I haven't locked up my gun already, I'm going to lock it up and make it clear to my son or daughter, you can have this gun and use it under adult supervision when we say so. Otherwise, keep your hands off of it. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network.
Welcome back to Jimmy Carter 2.0. Welcome back. He's the same bad prez, but his name is Joe. Well, the names have all changed since Jim was around. But the swamp that remains can't be turned around. Joe's killing off the nation.
Killing off the nation.
Say hello to stagflation.
Hello to stagflation.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause brain cells he ain't got. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you and always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll today, and you can find it both at Twitter, at Lars Larson Show, and also on my website at LarsLarson.com. Should Northwest states make their mask rules permanent, as Oregon proposes doing? Now, I might say parenthetically to that, 44 states out of the 50 have no mask rules. But Oregon does, Washington does, and you've heard people talking about them. For example, the parents who will call in and say, my kid can't take wearing a mask all day long in school. So Oregon's rules are there, but they are not considered permanent. They were adopted as temporary. They're supposed to run out in February. Well, guess what? Kate Brown wants to make them permanent. And then she'll set a set of criteria. I don't know if she even follows her own criteria. And that in theory, at some point in 2022 or 23 or 24 or 34 or 44, she'll take the mask rules off. We don't know when. But they want to make the mask rules permanent. I would say no to that idea. You can vote any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, that song, Welcome Back, about Jimmy Carter and his legacy. I know some of you, I remember Jimmy Carter was president when I was still in high school, but he was a terrible, terrible president. We had stagflation, we had energy shortages, we had massive inflation. We had high energy. You know, we had all these things going on that seemed to be very much like what's going on right now, which is why. And you might think it's unfair when Jim Gossett, our great parody guy who put together that song, talks about Joe Biden not having the brain cells. Let me give you one example from this week. This week, Joe Biden was asked, because his voice is off today, he sounds like he's got a bad cold. And he said, well, he had kissed his grandson and that probably he's blaming his grandson for getting a cold. And he claims it's only a cold. And, of course, people want to know, does the president have COVID? Joe Biden, of course, himself has said, if you're vaccinated, you can't get COVID, which we know isn't true. But a lot of what Joe Biden says isn't true. And then reporters said, well, how often are you tested? And he said, I'm tested every single day. And then Jen Psaki, his spokeswoman, came out and said, no, the president is not tested every day. It's interesting because my friend Joel Pollack pointed out, he said, listen, Jen Psaki is the voice of the people who actually control Joe Biden. He doesn't even know what's going on inside his own presidency, even something as personal as knowing, Mr. President, how often are you tested? Joe says every day. His staff says not every day. Who are you going to believe? You're going to believe Joe Biden or the staff that seems to be running the whole show? A couple of issues that I want to bring up. Make sure you pay attention to these. Many of you have reached out to me about this long-term care scam that Jay Inslee has going. The tax is supposed to kick in on the 3rd of January of next year and 2022. So you say, well, what's the tax on all the income you make? They're going to take hundreds of dollars out of your paycheck. And if you say, what am I buying with that? You say, well, it's long-term care insurance, except there are a bunch of qualifications to it. And we've gone over this a number of times on the show. If you live in the state and you pay the tax for 9 years and then stop working, you don't qualify to get any benefit. If you live in the state and pay the tax for 10 years, but then you move out of state when you retire or to take a different job, you don't qualify. There are a number of things by which you don't qualify. I've said a number of times that if a private company ran a scam like this, where they sought to get insurance premiums out of people, knowing that they were going to automatically disqualify most of the people who were paying the premiums so that they wouldn't have to pay out any kind of claims on those premiums, you'd say, well, that's criminal. And I'd say, yeah, people would go to prison for that. Maybe Jay Inslee should go to prison. So a lot of folks, including a lot of Republicans, have said, we want to see this put off, at least put off for now, maybe killed altogether. Guess what? Yesterday, Jay Inslee announced that he is talking to lawmakers about a potential delay in the collection of a mandatory payroll tax to fund the so-called long-term care program that, by the way, even if you manage to pay in for 10 years, even if you don't move out of state, even if you actually qualify to collect, the amount you collect would pay for about 3 months in a long-term care facility. So if you go into long-term care for more than 3 months, it's not going to meet the need. So it's a cheat. It's a scam. And even the Democrats have now signed a letter asking Jay Inslee, put this thing off, because they understand what's going to happen next year, which is an election year. The Democrats, Jay Inslee's party, have realized if we start scooping hundreds of dollars out of people's paychecks for a scam plan like this, the taxpayers, many of whom are also voters, are going to punish us at the polls. So they're asking Jay Inslee to put it off. I think they should put it off because it's a scam. It's a cheat. It isn't right. And it needs to stop. Now to your calls on a First Amendment Friday. Let's go to Tyler. Hey, Tyler, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, Lars, I'll open with a question. What do you know about the proposed DSHS mental health behavioral facility that's proposed in Clark County?
I have not. I think I've heard that they proposed a facility. I don't know much more beyond that. I'd have to go look.
And I'm going to tell you that's by design. So I sent it to you about six emails 6 months ago. I'm working with Senator Don Benton, former Senator Don Benton, because he's in the area. It's really disappointing that even, you know, a person such as you is completely unaware of it. I think it's, it just shows to how well the process has been covered up. It's completely in your wheelhouse, too. I don't know how much time you have to talk about this. I can.
Well, on a First Amendment Friday, you've got about another minute, Tyler, and then we're going to have to hit a break. But tell me this. Are they going to build it, and are they going to build it someplace that's going to be problematic for the people who live there?
It's going to be built in a place that's problematic for the entire region because of this new opportune location that does not fit the pre-design criteria. The taxpayers paid for some strong studies on five locations that fit a whole bunch of specific criteria that would suit this site. However, the county, because they missed out on one of the locations, they kind of went radio silent, and then they got this opportunistic purchase of a property that fits none of the criteria other than it's close to zoning, but not quite. They're still going to have to get permission to build it there. And because of that, now this facility has went from civil commitment only forced by a judge as well as preventative care to the legislature changed the makeup of the facility because of location and its poor access to only civil commitment. The only way anybody can get there is by
have a judge
saying,
say
hey,
you're not able to make your own decisions. We're going to lock you up.
Yeah, there's now they've taken this whole preventative care. Last I checked, the best way to cure a disease is through preventative care, and this is solely because of this location change. We've got a great Facebook page, Preserve 159th Street. There is a and there's a link to the website.
Preserve 159th Street. Tyler, have Don Benton reach out to me. I'll be glad to feature that one. It's one we ought to talk about. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, 866-HEY-LARS. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to First Amendment Friday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, which I like to mention from time to time. It's been around for 21 years. Next year marks 22 years. 24 great radio stations that serve Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And we try to make it an honestly provocative show, provoking you to think. Think about this. The city of Portland, for example, has said we will not spend the money to have sufficient numbers of police officers on the street to enforce the crimes. Now, of course, you need a DA willing to prosecute, and social justice warrior Mike Schmidt has decided not to prosecute hundreds, perhaps by now it's thousands of crimes. But the city of Portland apparently has money for all kinds of other goodies like this. They have just announced that a new program will purchase, deliver, and install portable heat pump and cooling units inside 15,000 homes and apartments over the next 5 years, including 3,000 by the beginning of next summer. Now, they're worried about people getting too hot. There were people who died because of some extreme heat this last summer. But imagine this. Is it the government's job to supply air conditioning for your home? And if so, is it also their job to supply heating? I'm sure a lot of people out there would love to get a brand new furnace. Is Ted Wheeler or is Jenny Durkin willing to buy everybody a brand new furnace? I just had to buy a furnace a couple of years ago. They are not inexpensive. I'd love to have somebody else pay for it. I do not want the government paying for those kinds of things. We have begun to see governments at every single level, city, state, and federal, begin to say why broadband internet is an absolute necessity. So we have to pay for that. And air conditioning is an absolute necessity, so we have to pay for that. And we already have programs that pay for government-funded health care, government-funded food, government-funded housing, government-funded education. In other words, the list goes on and on. Do all good things come from the government, or do some things come from your hard work and your own paycheck? Let's go to Mike. Mike, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. It's First Amendment Friday. And if you want to join in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. Mike, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. On Inslee's proposed tax for long-term care.
Not proposed. It goes into effect, just so people are clear. I don't want them to think this is just an idea. It's already going into effect in January, just under a month from now. So the proposal is to put it on hold. I would like to see them drive a stake through its heart and kill it altogether. But don't let people believe that this is only a proposed idea. It's already in state law. They're already planning to start it in January.
Okay, Lars, does that apply to someone who is retired, such as I am?
No, it does not.
Does that apply to any pensions or Social Security?
Well, it doesn't apply. The pension question may be a different one, because the tax applies to income. and I'm not a tax accountant, so I don't know whether it would apply to a pension that you have. Also, Mike, if you've been careful and put away a 401k or an IRA, or maybe you have rental income, you may end up paying it. I think some of it comes down to whether you receive the income as a W-2, and a lot of it gets into complicated other definitional things like that. Do you know what I mean? Because
yes.
I know it applies to W-2. So if you draw a paycheck, you're going to pay the tax. And the tax has no cap on it. It goes up as high as you want it to go. And it's 0.58%. So if you made, just to make the math easy, if you made $100,000, it's going to be about $600 in taxes. If you make $50,000, it'll be at $300 a year in taxes. But so if you're making income in retirement, Mike, you're probably going to pay it. But if you don't pay in for 10 full years, you can't collect a dime.
I see. Well, now, thank
now
you,
does that sound like a, does that sound like a scam to you, Mike?
Yes, it does.
You know, if you want to see a depiction of this kind of thing in movies, have you ever seen a movie called The Rainmaker?
Yes.
It was Matt Damon, right? And he plays a young lawyer, kind of doesn't know his way around. But he goes up against a big insurance company, and Roy Scheider, the guy from 2001, the movie, he plays this evil, snidely, whiplash kind of guy who heads this insurance company. And Hollywood painted him as evil as a character because what he had done was he figured out, how do I run an insurance company where I collect premiums from a lot of people and then I very, very rarely ever pay anything out? And you say, well, that's evil. And I said, well, that's Jay Inslee right now. Jay Inslee to a T. How can we collect a lot of money from a lot of people and then pay out next to nothing to the people who actually are part of the system? Except with the Roy Scheider example from The Rainmaker, it was an insurance company and they had to talk you into signing up for the insurance. In this case, it's Jay Inslee and the legislature saying you have no choice. If you draw a paycheck, unless you go out and buy your own long-term care policy, and believe me, they're not cheap, then we are going to hit you with this tax and you have no choice at all. So in a lot of ways, it's even more evil than the Roy Scheider character in The Rainmaker.
Yes, it is.
So I think they should put it on hold, and I think that they should stop trying to rip people off, Jay Inslee. You're being a jerk, and your Democrat friends are scared to death of how the voters and the taxpayers are going to react when they find out they're getting ripped off by your scheme and they're not going to get much out of it. They're probably going to vote you out of office. Now, they can't do that to Jay, but they can do it to everybody else. I want to mention this as well. Governor Queen Kate Brown, or Kate Brown Shirt, whichever you prefer, has decided to set loose more killers from their prison cells. She has now released three inmates that were convicted in separate murders as juveniles without any announcement whatsoever. We don't even know if the prosecutors or the victims had a chance to have a say in this. Three different killers, all who were teenagers when convicted, now are quite a bit older. And Kate Brown has decided to set them loose on the community and get them out of prison early. And do you like that? It's First Amendment Friday. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Do you know that six Seattle shootings have happened in just the last 24 hours? Three people injured. Thankfully, nobody dead at this point. But both Seattle and Portland have a major problem. And the politicians in charge, it's as though they're operating in another universe. They say this is a gun violence problem. No, the guns aren't violent. It's the people with them in their hands. If you don't believe me, ask Alec Baldwin. Could that gun have killed his director without Alex Baldwin's finger on the trigger? And by the way, did anybody actually see? I didn't bother to watch last night. We'd seen the trailer already of Alex Baldwin saying, "I never pulled the trigger." In other words, the gun just went off by itself and shot a woman and killed her and wounded the assistant director of the program of the shoot he was on, the movie called Rust. No, Alex Baldwin will sit there on national television and say, yes, the gun was in my hand. Yes, a bullet came out of the end of the gun. But no, I had nothing to do with pulling the trigger. Well, I guess if he's crazy, he's no crazier than Jenny Durkin or Ted Wheeler or any of the other liberal woke politicians of the Northwest who insist This is not a problem of violent people. It's a problem of violent, inanimate objects. Now, if you can wrap your head around that, you probably qualify for membership in the Democrat Party. Glad to be with you on this Friday. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And our Twitter poll today, should Northwest states make their mask rules permanent as Oregon is currently proposing to do, because otherwise those rules run out in February? I would say no. Do not let them make this a permanent program, and say, we promise, cross our hearts and hope to die, that at some point in the very near future, maybe in months, maybe in years, we will take the mask rules off. 44 American states do not have mask rules. The states of the Pacific Northwest have gone absolutely crazy and decided to go the other direction. Let's go to Nicole. Hey, Nicole, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. What's up?
Oh, it's perfect. I just heard you. I got in my car, and I just heard you talking about the air conditioners that the government up in Portland's wanting to pay for.
Yeah.
And then you start talking about they want to, you know, make everything for free, the dental care, the medical care, everything for free. And I'm actually the perfect person for you to pick their brain, because I work inside of a certain dental corporation, and I firsthand have knowledge of seeing how a government-run, like, dental side of things work, and people want government-ran medical.
No.
I think
please,
you can't
no.
about that, folks.
Please, no. Don't give
I
us...
I would highly rethink that, because, I mean, it's great what I do, but on the other hand of it, like, if someone can't afford certain things, the government entity of it will not pay for that procedure to be done. And a lot of these procedures people need to, like, stay healthy and, you know, to be able to use their teeth, and they won't pay for it. And a lot of these people can't afford it. So I can just imagine what they're going to do in medical.
Well, see,
you know,
I'm with you, Nicole, because what a lot of people don't realize is that if it sounds, I mean, my parents always, I don't know if your parents did, my parents always said, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably isn't true, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, when the government says, when the people who want universal health care is what they call it, it sounds so good. It's like, it sounds like something magic. Universal health care will be surrounded by health care, and it'll all be free, and somebody else will pay for it. Yeah, it sounds too good to be true. It is. Because what usually happens, it happens with Medicaid all the time. This is insurance for poor people. And what they say is they say, well, you have Medicaid. And you go, okay, so can I get any kind of procedure I want? Oh, I'm sorry. We only fund a certain number of things. Now, it's a pretty deep list. It's a very expensive program.
Yep.
But you say, well, what if I need isn't on the list, and you're screwed?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. 21 and under for certain things. 21 and pregnant for certain things. I see it every day. So if anyone out there is listening and this ever comes up on a ballot to vote for free medical, government funded medical, absolutely no. Like, no. Nope. I see it firsthand in the dental world. And I'm telling you, it is not a good idea. Okay, because here is an example in the dental world, because I'm not a patient in the dental world. I am seeing it on the other side. That's all I'm going
to
say.
To be in the dental world, you probably have to have perfect teeth, don't you, Nicole? I mean, shouldn't everybody in the dental world have those big gleaming teeth that you see in toothpaste commercials?
Not necessarily. I actually, when I started in dental, I didn't have perfect teeth, and now I have braces to help my smile. Like, I understand the importance of it. It's not just straight teeth. It's about your bite. But anyway, back to what I was saying.
Yeah.
There is a huge wait list just to get in to see a dentist. There, like, people think it's like, oh, I can just pop in. No, it's not. You can't pop in anytime. Sometimes we're just seeing people who have toothaches because we can't get them in to do their regular dental care. And people think medical is going to be easier. No. You got a lump under your armpit. Well, by the time you're going to be able to get in and see a doctor, it's going to be full-blown stage 4, like, cancer that's gone into your lymph nodes. People need
you've summed that up very well. Nicole, you want to really scare yourself? Look at the rest of medical outside of dental. So things like your hearts, your lungs, cancer, like you said. If you want to see what's scary, Canada is scary. Because I routinely go I look at their newspapers, and they do studies, stories on the government there, which runs all the medical care, which is why so many people from Canada, if they have the extra money, will come to the United States for kinds of medical care. And they'll say, our goal is that if your general practitioner, your family doctor, says you need to see a cardiologist because you might have a heart problem, what they say is our goal is that all of those people get in to see a cardiologist within 6 months. And you say, hold on a second. My doctor says there's a problem with my ticker, and you hope to get me in to see a cardiologist within 6 months?
And
if you say, what happens if I die in the meantime? And their answer is, it saves the government a lot of money.
Yep. So if anybody can hear me, and Lars, Lars and I are saying, please vote no on that. If it ever comes up, vote no.
Nicole, thank you very much. I appreciate that call. That was right on target. By the way, I wanted to mention this. Transit agencies like TriMet, they were bragging this week that they've now gone to all clean diesel, meaning it's some kind of renewable diesel. It costs a lot more money to buy it, but it's made out of cooking oil, which, by the way, cooking oil has now almost tripled in price, and it's becoming unavailable. And why? Because the people who make that kind of oil have said, we make a lot more when we sell it to people to turn it into fuel than we do when we sell it as cooking oil. So we're going to go that. Now, TriMet has announced they have a shortage in staffing. They don't have enough bus drivers, so they're going to reduce the amount of service they provide. So you're still paying the same amount in taxes to support TriMet. They just deliver less service. Anybody who thinks that's a good deal, I'll take the naysayer call. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. We'll get to those at 866-HEY-LARS soon. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. I think we're only beginning to see the kind of damage that is being done throughout the United States and here in the Pacific Northwest by some of these crazy mandates, including vaccine mandates. And I thought I'd talk to a young lady who I think is very much being victimized by this. But the victim is not just her. It's all of the people who she would end up serving as a nurse had she finished in nursing school, and the people who will not be served because we're going to see a brain drain and a skill and talent drain if we don't stop this kind of stuff. Her name is Madison Wright, and she joins me now. And if I have a dog in the fight at all, it's that my mom was a nurse, so I have a soft spot for nurses. Madison, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars, for having me.
So you're studying to be a nurse. You're almost there.
Yes, sir. I'm actually only 6 months away from graduating with a degree in nursing. I currently, as of yesterday, went to Clackamas Community College. And I received a sad email yesterday that because of this mandate, I will no longer be able to continue in the program unless I'm fully vaccinated because the program is unable to find me a clinical placement. So,
have you wanted to be a nurse for a long time?
Yes, sir, I have. I've literally worked for about 5 years now to get where I am.
And you're not going to be able to finish at the school you've been attending, even though you're only 6 months away, because they said you either get vaccinated or we can't have you here as a student?
Yes, sir. And the sad thing is, prior to this mandate, I worked as a nursing student the entire first year of my program in direct contact with the public giving COVID vaccines. But because of this mandate, just out of the blue, I received an email saying, hey, you are no longer allowed to go into the clinical setting because of this mandate. So the OHA and the governor have robbed me of the opportunity to finish my education in the state of Oregon.
Madison, tell me this. Some of the people listening are going to be saying, well, why doesn't this young lady just go out and get the vaccine? Would you mind speaking to that if you care to? And if you don't want to, tell me.
So I have many reasons for not wanting to get vaccinated. I was actually having a conversation with my dad last night, and he said, Madison, if you do not protect and stand up and fight for your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the choice to choose what goes in your body, it will be taken from you. And he's very right. And the thing that frustrates me a lot, quite frankly, is that the same people will tout the idea that it is your body, your choice when it comes to abortion. But it is not your body, your choice, according to our governor, when it comes to what can be injected into your body. I am frustrated at the statistics that they I'm frustrated that honestly they don't give us an option to pull a titer, which is to prove that I'm immune to COVID by testing the antibodies that are in my blood through natural immunity. I asked my school yesterday why they would not accept a titer, and they said they don't have an answer for me, that currently clinical sites are not allowed to pull titers because there is a vaccine mandate. And so I also said, I asked my school, why are you so heavily pushing vaccination when it is shown that you can still get and spread COVID and its multiple variants when after you're vaccinated? And they had no answer for me.
You know, this is the part that doesn't make sense because, Madison, all those of us who don't have the technical training that you do, even as a nursing student, we've been looking at this. We hear all these politicians like Kate Brown, like Jay Inslee say, we're going to follow the science. And then you say, well, this doesn't make sense. If you won't take note of natural immunity, how are you following the science? And I wish, I mean, yesterday, Jay Inslee, I know he's in Washington State, you're in Oregon, but as far as I'm concerned, Jay Inslee and Kate Brown are pretty much interchangeable. They're Tweedledee and Tweedledummer. And Inslee came out and did this long rant about, I'm sorry, but I had to say it. He did this long rant about the Supreme Court this week, which heard the Mississippi case involving the 15-week limit on abortion. And he went into this long rant about, we will fight for your rights to make your own decisions about your body. And my friend Phil Vandervoort, who's John Carlson's producer, said, Lars, do you realize Jay Inslee just went on this long rant about the right of a person to decide what happens to their own body when it comes to killing babies, but he doesn't realize that by doing that, he's also supporting the right of a person to decide whether or not to take a vaccine, except Jay Inslee's too dumb to recognize he's talking about two sides of the same coin in a lot of ways.
Yes, sir. I completely agree. It's incredibly sad and incredibly hypocritical, but we're seeing that a lot these days in politics. And the sad thing is, ultimately, we are going to see patients lose their lives because healthcare workers are leaving the profession, not only because of these mandates, but because they're incredibly burnt out. I personally know many nurses, and the patient-to-nurse ratio is horrible. We're seeing 8-9 patients that these nurses have to take on, and that is horrifying because these nurses are burnt out. There's an increasing amount of incivility in nursing. I know many nursing students who had non-nursing jobs, so they were phlebotomists or nursing assistants within the hospital while they're getting their degree, and they literally left. And they said, I would rather have to take out extra loans than to work in healthcare right now. It is incredibly sad. I wrote a paper my first year of nursing school about the direct link between nursing burnout and incivility within healthcare and how patients will lose their lives.
Yeah, because they've really
protect our frontline workers.
You know, they've set people up at odds with one another. You've got Karens running around screaming about masks. You've got other people screaming about vaccine mandates. You've got people who believe in one side or the other side. And then they put them all into what already has to be. I mean, nobody likes to be in the hospital. Nobody likes to have to go to the doctor, you know, but you say, well, we understand we have to do it. And then you shove all these people together and say, we're going to put pressure on the staff. We're going to put pressure on the patients. The patients are going to get a no or an answer they don't understand or doesn't make sense. And the staff is going to get the same, and then you're going to say we're going to dump them all in the same box and see what happens, which I think is just it's the definition of chaos.
Yes, sir, it is. That's healthcare in Oregon right now is true chaos. My school had the opportunity to send students last spring into the clinical setting, and my cohort had not had any in-person clinicals as far as in a healthcare setting other than giving COVID vaccines because of the pandemic. They ruled it unsafe to have students in the healthcare setting. But finally last spring they opened it up and our faculty said no because it is going to be unsafe for our students to be practicing with these nurses. They are so burnt out. They are so burnt out. They cannot take on students as well as all these patients. It's a liability. It's honestly a liability.
No doubt. Are you going to have to leave the whole region?
Yes, sir. I'm currently looking into schools in other states that support freedom of choice as to what goes in your body.
Wow. Well, I wish you well. I hope you finish up. We know that we were short of nurses when we hit the pandemic. We got shorter still now. And then the mandates came along and we're going to be shorter still. There have been hospitals that have closed. There have been emergency rooms that have closed, maternity wards that have closed. I wish you well in the profession. I hope you have a long, healthy profession. Madison, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Lars.
You bet. That's Madison Wright, 6 months away from graduating as a nurse. And you're going to see this kind of brain drain and skill drain as people with the kind of talents and the willingness to go into a tough profession are going to be told, no, 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 you're going to do it our way or the highway. And she's decided she has to take the highway. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, and I'll get back to your phone calls and your emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, Michael Farron, who's an economist, might not agree with me because I don't speak in economics terms. I can barely balance my checkbook. But when I look back over the last 10 months now, just 10 months of all the damage that's been done by Joe Biden, and I think back to 5 years ago when Donald Trump predicted that we would all win so much in America that we would get tired of winning. And it was a good joke because he said, nobody's ever going to get tired of winning. I just have asked people lately, are you tired of losing yet? Record high inflation, record high government spending, low unemployment rates, but allegedly millions and millions of people who can't pay their bills. So the government starts shoveling out mountains of cash, which I think has an adverse effect on the rest of the country. And now the most recent jobs number was supposed to be close to 600,000 new jobs in the month of November. And instead, 210,000, just over a third of that number. We'll go to Michael Farron now, economist with the Mercatus Center at George Mason. Michael, can you make sense of why only 210,000 new jobs in November?
You know, if I could, I'd probably work. I wish I could, Lars. I just wish I could. And every other economist out there wishes they could as well. We either miss our projections low or we miss our projections high. And the good news is some of the recent projections that were missed were solved when late arriving data came in and showed jobs growth better than usual. But I'm worried that that's not going to happen in this case. I don't think the economic cavalry is coming to the rescue.
Now, I've heard at least a few politicians say, well, this is because of a new variant. Well, that's a relatively recent development, or it's because of other things. Is there anything that we can point to other than just high inflation, high energy prices, and a low willingness of people to go back to work? I mean, to re-enter, although we did get almost 600,000 people to rejoin the labor force. So I guess your labor force participation number is up. So 600,000 people come in and they say, we'd like a job. And don't we still have about 10 million available jobs in America right now? So those people can go to work right away, except the economy isn't generating enough new jobs.
Yes, we do have record numbers of new jobs waiting on qualified people to apply to them. We shouldn't necessarily assume that just because we have 10 million new jobs that the current 6.9 million people who are officially accounted as unemployed can just hop right into those jobs. There's obviously some mismatch necessarily there in terms of location or skill. But you're right. We shouldn't attribute these low numbers to the new variant because the data was collected before that variant was even recognized as a thing. Honestly, I think that there may be an issue with these payroll jobs numbers in terms of a seasonal adjustment problem, that there might actually have been more jobs created, but the automatic seasonal adjustment that the BLS applies to their survey data may have made it seem like less jobs were created than really were.
Is that just to explain, because you use a lot of terms of art, which are fine. I mean, they're handy. But for people out there, if we have a lot of businesses that hire people at certain times of the year, like the holidays, but that's expected to be hiring, that offsets whatever hiring you normally get. That's why the seasonal adjustment is a problem.
Exactly, Lars. Sorry for going so quickly into the weeds. I should have prepped you first. But yes, that seasonal adjustment is just to make different months comparable to each other. Otherwise, in January, when we saw the seasonal jobs drop off, it would look like every January was the start of a recession.
And at the beginning of summer, when they hire all the farm workers and you hire a bunch of people in the spring and summer, it would look like our jobs are going through the roof, and they really don't. That happens every year, but it's seasonal.
Exactly. So the problem is that we're facing now is these seasonal adjustments are for normal years. But we can't say that we're back to a normal economy yet. So I think that what has happened is that if you look at the raw data, the non-seasonally adjusted data, it says that about 778,000 jobs were created, but they revised that downward to 210, 550,000 lower than the raw number. And that's not all that unusual. Like, this seasonal adjustment happens every month, but it may not be exactly the right adjustment this month.
I'll tell you what, I'll invite you to go into the weeds, Michael, because I don't mind sometimes, but you mentioned this mismatch where I've been telling people 10 million jobs. I think in January it was 7 million jobs. And I said, what's the problem? If you get 6 million unemployed and 10 million jobs, match those up, we're at full employment. I know it's not that simple, but how much of a mismatch is there where there are a bunch of jobs in one area, but all the jobless people are 500 miles away or 1,000 miles away? We should be able to tell that by local unemployment rate, shouldn't we?
We should, but we don't really have a good handle on local unemployment rates. The data, we just don't put enough effort and money toward collecting data at the local level. And so the best we can pretty much give you is state unemployment rates over a three-month average, or county-level, more local unemployment rates, but even over a larger period of time to be averaged. So we don't have a perfect handle on what's going on with the unemployment rate locally. But we can look at different industries. In terms of science and research jobs, we've seen enormous growth in those jobs over the course of the pandemic, and there's still a lot of job openings in that area. There's also a lot of job openings in the leisure and hospitality industry, and we've actually seen the wage growth for those workers top the wage growth for all other industries. Leisure and hospitality workers are earning 12.3% more year over year than they would have been earning in 2020. So in terms of different areas and different industries, we're just looking at a situation where someone who's just out of high school or college isn't necessarily ready to step into one of those research positions. And at the same time, the entertainment industry, say concentrated in Las Vegas, may not be able to access the people who unemployed workers who are looking for work in Los Angeles.
I guess I just wonder whether if you're in Los Angeles and you're about a 2.5-hour drive away from Vegas and you say, I can't find a job in L.A., but there are jobs aplenty in Las Vegas, don't you relocate? Because Americans have done that through the entire history of our country.
Absolutely. We do see reduced migration over the last few decades. It's actually been kind of unusual given our history of internal migration. But you also have to look at the fact that, again, with that high wage growth for leisure and hospitality workers, if a worker says, you know what, I don't need to move to Las Vegas, I'm already in high demand in Los Angeles, then those job openings that are in Las Vegas will continue to stay unfilled until there's enough motivation for that internal migration to take place.
How do we get the rest of the people on the sidelines to say, okay, my ideal job isn't available, but I can get that job right now and I need to pay the bills? And how much is the government to blame for paying people not to work still?
That's a good question. Most of the pandemic recovery programs that essentially paid people not to work are done, with the exception of the expansion to the child tax credit. Tax credit was expanded by 50% for children over 6 years old, and by more than 50% for children under six. And it was converted, part of it was converted, half of it was converted to a monthly payment rather than a lump sum payment during tax season. So we may be seeing some people remaining out of the labor market because getting monthly payments allows them to float a little bit better. We may have also be seeing just some people having moved to new locations. lower cost of living, families are able to make the decision that, you know what, we only need one wage earner right now.
And I wouldn't necessarily mind that. Michael, thank you very much. That's Michael Farron from George Mason University. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Will you bring me a gun, please?
Everybody knows Lars loves guns.
I'm a citizen with a constitutional right to bear arms.
And he also loves the Second Amendment. Let's face it, America isn't America without guns.
All right, that does it. It's time to bring out the big gun.
Protecting your right to bear arms every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Well, I got to say welcome back on a First Amendment Friday. On the Second Amendment issues, you know my dog in the fight. I own guns. I support the Second Amendment. I think Alec Baldwin is a first-class idiot. And earlier this week, we were talking about the fact that Baldwin, the trailers that were running for an interview that ran last night, I did not see the interview. I didn't spend the time watching Baldwin try to escape any responsibility for having a gun in his hand. A bullet was fired, and a young lady he worked with and apparently liked very, very well was shot to death by that. And another man, was injured or wounded. Thank God he's going to recover. But Baldwin is doing the strangest thing. And here's why. He doesn't seem to know the first thing about guns, even though as an actor, he's been around guns for literally decades. So in the interview, they ran the trailer where he said, "I never pulled the trigger. Nobody pulled the trigger. I didn't pull the trigger." But that isn't the relevant part of what he said. Jim wrote in, and several people have written in, saying, "Lars, Baldwin says he never pulled the trigger. In his interview, he said he pulled the hammer back, and when he released the hammer, the gun went off. That's an admission of negligence. If you check the chamber and make sure it's empty, it will not go off. If he didn't pull the hammer back fully to a locked position and then released it, of course, with a live round, it can fire. He should be arrested and charged. Others are negligent as well. He is responsible. Just saying you're not does not make it true." And then I got this email from a nice young lady who said, "Lars, my husband and I both love your show. If you would comment on this, don't use my name, and I will not. I keep hearing Alec Baldwin saying he didn't pull the trigger. I find this confusing or misleading. The trigger is what pulls the hammer back to fire the gun." Well, that isn't always true. It depends on whether it's a single-action revolver or a double-action revolver. In the interview he gave last night, he said he pulled the hammer back for the camera and then just let it go. "I have a revolver," she writes, "and if I were to pull the hammer back without cocking the gun and then just let go of it, it would fire if there was a live round in the chamber. I don't understand why this hasn't been pointed out." I also thought it was confusing that he said he didn't know he'd shot anyone until the police told him during the interview. Yet he says people came up to him almost immediately to tell him he didn't do anything wrong. I understand he's an actor and his new role is that of a grieving friend, but he should get his story straight. I believe they call that continuity errors. And I would agree with you. I'm going to leave the name off of that one, but she's right. This is the craziness that Alec Baldwin doesn't seem to understand because he doesn't seem to understand the first thing about guns. Now, if you're going to handle real guns, even if you're promised you're going to be handed a gun loaded with blanks, doesn't matter. If you say, "I'm going to take responsibility for this piece of equipment," which is a gun in this case, it could be a car, it could be a knife, it could be a chainsaw, it could be any number of other inanimate objects that you animate with your hands. If he doesn't understand that if you have a live round in the cylinder, and you pull the hammer back and just let go of it, it will fire. This guy doesn't know the first thing about it, and a young lady is dead as a result. Now, that's where this gets crazy. And Stephanopoulos's interview, it's a different show, but Stephanopoulos's interview, I think, and the trailers that they ran out all week promoting this interview, is deliberately deceptive. They kept running in the trailer him saying, "I didn't pull the trigger." But, and again, if you understand anything about the subject, and if you're going to do a story on it, as Stephanopoulos did and ABC did, it's incumbent on you to understand the subject. If you say, "Well, can a gun go off if nobody pulls the trigger, but you just pull the hammer back and let go of it?" Anybody who's ever had any familiarity with guns is going to say, "Of course it can." With a revolver, yeah, pull the hammer back, let go of it. If it hasn't locked into place back, when that falls on the round, it can, it doesn't always, but it can go off. And the fact that the reporters and ABC News chose to run a deliberately deceptive soundbite that ran in trailers for days before the interview actually aired. If they'd aired the part where Alec Baldwin said, "I pulled the hammer back and just let go of it," everybody who knows guns, even people who don't know guns that well, would have said, "You pull the hammer back and let go of it. If it's got a live round in the chamber, it's going to go off." That's how crazy this is. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Let me go first to Dr. Kazra. Dr. Kazra, welcome to the program. What's on your mind on First Amendment Friday?
Hey, Lars. Thanks for taking the call. I want to talk a little bit about vaccines. But, first, I just have to say with the gun discussion. So, I certainly believe in the value of having all tools, including firearms. The problem that we have, and I think the last segment that you were just describing, is we have an unfortunate abundance of stupid people, too. And that's the problem with guns.
Is there a medical treatment for that, Doc?
Unfortunately, no. You try and educate as much as you can, and that's where we got to go. So, that's just the issue with guns.
I'll tell you what, Doc, I'm going to make you the promise. We're going to hold you through. We'll get you in the next hour, but I appreciate the call. I just know we're close. It's First Amendment Friday, and you've got the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday and live on our Radio Northwest Network that in January celebrates 22 years of faithful service to the Pacific Northwest, supplying honestly provocative talk radio on a daily basis. Now, you want provocative? How about if I suggest that a member of Congress, who I think has put her own job at great risk already, is now putting it at even greater risk, I think, by fibbing to her constituents. And the man who wants to replace Jaime Herrera Butler is Joe Kent. He is one of the candidates running for the nomination to replace Jaime Herrera Butler in Washington's 3rd Congressional District. We're also putting out the word to the congresswoman that she's welcome to come on and try to explain her latest crazy vote. Joe Kent, thanks a lot for taking the time today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Lars.
I know we're getting you in a kind of a noisy environment, but I got an email this morning from a constituent of Jaime Herrera Butler who wrote to her, and he wanted to know why she had voted $400 million. There were 80 Republicans who joined the Democrats and voted for a massive new federal database that's going to take existing databases and knit them together to track the vaccine status of individual Americans. First, let me get your take on this, on H.R. 550, which was voted for by all the Democrats in the House and 80 Republicans, including every single Republican from Washington State who's in the House, although Cliff Benz from Oregon voted no on it. Give me your first reaction to that, please.
Well, I mean, the bill is an absolute infringement and assault on our private rights. The government continues to take more and more of our freedoms and get more and more involved in our individual lives. And this is just a further extension of it. And once again, we have the Republicans that are just going along with it. We elected the Republicans to push back on this totalitarian type of tactics. And Jaime Herrera Butler and the Surrender Caucus, they're going right along with it, thinking that we're not paying attention and that we just owe them our votes.
Well, by the way, this gentleman who wrote to Herrera Butler got kind of a form letter back in which she wrote back and said, H.R. 550 actually increases personal privacy within state-based information systems that already exist. The data these systems use does not include personally identifiable information, and individuals can opt out anytime they want to. Well, that doesn't square up with what the sponsor of the bill said. And you, if you have a different understanding, tell me. But my understanding is, because I read her quote on the air the other day, the woman who sponsored this bill said we're going to have this massive federal database. It's going to take existing databases and knit them together. Then we're going to add more information. It's going to track the vaccine status of every single American. And it will even remind those Americans when they're due for a new vaccine or a new booster shot. And I thought, Well, if Jamie Herrera Butler, member of Congress, is saying it doesn't have any personal identifiable information, but it has the ability to send you a text message or an email, I would beg to differ with the congresswoman.
She thinks we're not paying attention. I mean, she's gotten very complacent in her seat. She makes these horrible votes that go against conservative principles, that go against what her constituents want to do. She votes with the donor class. She's voting with Big Pharma. She's going along to get along with the Beltway. And she thinks that we're not paying attention. It's as simple as that. She can't explain away this vote, just like she can't explain away her countless bad votes, most recently voting for red flag laws in the NDAA. And I mean, the list just goes on and on. So I think this is exactly why I'm running for Congress, is to restore the voice of the people.
I'll tell you what, I'll be glad to have Congresswoman Herrera Butler on the show to explain this. But I frankly, just at first blush, if somebody said, do we need a gigantic database to gather more vaccine information on Americans, my first reaction would be, no, we don't need it. I can't see a positive use for it. And if you say, well, the government has to track that. Why does the government have to track the vaccine status? Every single American of sound mind and body understands whether they've been vaccinated or not, and whether or not they're going to get the vaccine. And their doctors presumably know as well, because they've chosen to go to a doctor. So the doctor has a right to know about his patient, and his patient already knows. Who else has to know? And who else? I mean, where's the advantage of any kind in having the government track this data, especially governments that are so lousy at computers, at safeguarding data? They regularly get hacked. Even the Pentagon gets hacked, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And also because I see a political part of this where, you know, a lot of these databases contain a lot of information that would be really handy for political parties to know. And gee, would I put it past the Democrats to say, let's harvest some of that info. We'll get our friends on the inside in the deep state to provide us with the kinds of connections. I pointed out the other day that, Joe, a lot of these big social media companies, Facebook, Twitter, where do they make their money? You know, they don't charge a fee. Well, they make their money because they know everything about Joe Kent. They know everything about Lars. They know that I buy power tools. They know that Tina buys gifts for our granddaughter, things like that. They know your name. They know your age. They know your income. They know what part of the country you live in. They know what kind of stuff you read. And so if they have all that data and they aggregate it all together, apply a little bit of AI, and all of a sudden you have enough information to actually manipulate people.
And the best thing is, you know, people's vaccine status, and the vaccine status right now determines whether or not you will do exactly what the government says. If you went out and you got the vaccine, and you got your boosters, they know probably what your political affiliation is. They know how compliant you'll be. And if you are not vaccinated, you're not getting the boosters. They know that you're not being compliant. That's exactly what they're trying to track with these vaccine passports. This is essentially what this is. This is just bringing about the vaccine passport controlled by the government.
The other two numbers I wanted to throw at you, Joe, and get your comment on them, because they jumped out at me. Earlier this week, the CDC reported that 30% of the people who work in healthcare in America have said, I'm not getting vaccinated. And then this morning, we got a number that they've gone out and checked with private companies and said, how many of you are going to push a vaccine mandate on your employees? And 32% of them said, we ain't doing it. We're not going to push a vaccine mandate on our companies. So those two numbers alone suggest that there is a big chunk of America that rejects the idea wholesale of either your boss telling you to do it or you doing it, even if you work in healthcare and presumably know the issue very, very well.
Yeah, I think those are encouraging numbers, because we're seeing more people go out and take a stand. And so those are the people that actually admit that they feel that way. And so I think the numbers are actually even greater. This is a great awakening. I think right now there isn't Republicans, there isn't Democrats. There's two sides. There's one side that wants complete and total control of your life. And then there is our side that wants to give people back their individual freedoms. And this vaccine mandate, vaccine passport issue is a hill that we have to die on. So I would tell everybody to hold strong. Get out in their communities, talk to people, and we have to start resisting and pushing back, you know, within the law, but pushing back against these mandates. Otherwise, the government is never going to let up.
By the way, Joe, one other's to throw at you, and it was actually, I talked to my friend Phil Vandervoort, who's a producer for John Carlson up in Seattle, and he said, did you hear what Inslee said, Jay Inslee, the governor? And I said, he always does his press conference in the middle of my show. He went on a big, long rant about the Supreme Court and abortion, about how you have a right to decide what happens to your own body, and we're going to fight for that. So you've got Democrats who are saying you have a right to decide what happens to your body when you're killing babies, but you don't have a right to decide what happens to your body when the nurse or the doctor shows up with a syringe and a hypodermic in their hands. That is going to be incredibly telling to an awful lot of Americans about the double standards. That's Joe Kent, one of the candidates seeking to replace Jaime Herrera Butler in Congress, and you've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Welcome to the program and the Radio Northwest Network. Our Twitter poll today, should Northwest states make their mask rules permanent as currently Oregon is proposing to do, because the current rules run out in February and Kate Brown apparently wants to make those rules permanent? I would say no to that. If they want to continue with a temporary rule, justify it to us based on science. And if you can't do that because there are lots of studies now that say the masks don't do a damn bit of good, then don't do it at all. In any case, you can find the Twitter poll question on Twitter at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, Dr. Kazro was nice enough to wait because, Doc, I realized as I took your call that we were so tight to the top of the hour, I thought, well, we'll hold the doctor through. You wanted to say something about vaccines, and I'm glad to have you do it. I've had plenty to say about vaccines. Thanks for holding through, and what's on your mind?
Well, Lars, absolutely. You know, your show's worth it. Your listeners are worth it, first of all, so I'm happy to wait a little bit sometimes.
Well, thanks for that.
The thing with the vaccines is I have to tell you, I'm so sick of the repeat narrative. It's the same broken record. Now, great, so we have a vaccine. It decreases severity of infection. We have a couple of companies that have made that. Fantastic. You know, we have the prior administration to thank for getting that moving. We have the current administration for perhaps implementing it. But the thing is we're a year ahead. We have more cases than we've ever had. The number of deaths and hospitalizations are about the same as they were a year ago, and it's the same old record being played. Now, so then you ask, well, why don't we try something different? Well, the problem is the only people that are advising our lawmakers are status quo physicians.
Yep.
Now, I'm a naturopathic physician, and I don't know if you know what that means or
I do.
If most of your listeners know.
I so well, go ahead and say.
We're trained in the science just like regular doctors. But then we learn about other aspects. So it's not just about the prescription pad. We learn all the drugs, but we also learn about herbal medicine and nutrition and all that stuff. And so when you hear about things like vitamin D or vitamin A or zinc, you know, in social media, or if it even gets a mention in mainstream media, you know, it immediately gets attacked. And any physician who has had biochemistry and physiology, we all, whether you have an ND behind your name or an MD behind your name, whatever the letters are, we all learn about how those nutrients influence our immune function. The only difference is that once you graduate and you get out in practice, the naturopathic doctors are practicing it day to day. They keep up on it. They read the journals. They're using it in practice, whereas our medical counterparts, the majority of them, don't do that. They learn, they focus on the pharmacology, they focus on drug therapies. And so if that's all you live with and see your whole life, you start to think that that's all there is.
Yep.
And that's where we are. And so now we have an administration that is just anchored to the same old record, get your vaccine. For a vaccine that's a year old, it's probably completely ineffective to any new variants. And that's still what we're hearing.
They're even admitting, Dr. Kazra, the CEO of, I think it was Moderna, came out and said, look, our vaccine's going to have a tough time with this new one. And yet, let me suggest something to you that early on in the pandemic last year, I had some people say, well, remember chicken box parties? And I said, yes. And I thought they were an abundantly stupid thing to do. Because you know, while chickenpox isn't likely to kill you, it can do a lot of damage to you, and deliberately getting any disease seems like a dumb thing to do. On the other hand, my first reaction, Doc, I have to admit, in my gut, when I heard several days ago now about the one coming out of South Africa, it was over this last weekend, and I saw that the doctor said, yeah, it makes you feel tired, it makes you feel achy. And I've had a few funny people suggest that, you know, anything that makes you tired and achy, like doing a full day's work, of course the Democrats are going to be afraid of that. Having said that, I thought, well, if that's all it does, you know, that's one I wouldn't mind getting if I knew that what I was going to get out of getting it was natural immunity to the virus itself. And I thought, well, that wouldn't be so bad. The bad thing about it a year and a half ago was saying, when people said, why don't we just let everybody get it and we'll get herd immunity? I said, because even if the total number of deaths is 0.3%, which is a very small number, but do the number on 0.3% of 330 million people, and you've got a lot of dead bodies.
Adds up. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, as far as, you know, is it something we want to get? I think the answer is still no, because, you know, this thing impacts us so differently. To one person, it's no problem. The other person, all of a sudden, they're on a ventilator. And, you know, even though we like to think that it's predictable and that, you know, if you don't have those risk factors, you're probably going to be fine. I have seen young people, certainly, who get infected and they still have problems now, you know, and you know, they're athletes before and now they are still trying to recover.
But Doc, can I throw into that? We have a bunch of major athletes from around the world who have now, they took the vaccine with known mm-hmm. side effects, but rare, and they got the side effects and they're now wiped out in their profession. And you say, well, that's not a big deal. They're still alive. I said, but they have bad side effects. They have myocardial problems and, you know, blood clot problems and who knows what down the line. When the consequence of getting it is a possible bad outcome and possibly death, and the possible outcomes of the vaccine is possible bad effects and possible death, it sounds like, why would I want to add to my troubles by going that direction when I already know what the troubles are from the virus, which I can't necessarily avoid? And it seems as though eventually we're headed toward everybody is going to get it sooner or later anyway, even the vaccinated crowd, aren't they?
Well, yeah, well, back up a minute. So, you know, when you're talking about statistics of what are your risks from having a really bad outcome with COVID versus a bad outcome from the vaccine, it's still the best approach still favors the vaccine. And now I'm a naturopathic doctor, so, you know, I'm always already very careful about, you know, medications and anyone getting anything that they don't need. So I want to say that first of all, the statistics still favor getting a vaccine, at least for what was in the past. With new variations, nobody has any clue. It's experimentation, basically. It's a roll of the dice. You know, you can be hopeful. Now then, your question about, you know, isn't everybody going to get it? Well, none of the vaccines and none of the companies that sell these vaccines have come out saying they decrease transmission. In fact, they've said the opposite. It doesn't decrease transmission. So that if the only way that we're going to actually eradicate it, you know, it's great that our administration says we're going to fight this until it's over. Well, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean there's no more infections? Does that mean that it's at a rate that is consistent with flu, you know, infections and deaths? You're not going to eradicate this. This is not going to be over. Unless every single person on the globe is vaccinated, we're still going to have this.
And even then, Doc, if every single person on 7.5 billion of us were vaccinated, we still know the vaccinated can get it, they can give it, and they can die from it. All three of those. Dr. Kasva, thanks so much. I appreciate a great caller on the spur. And you're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I have never liked the idea of racial quotas for any kind of job. And I think most Americans, if they got the chance to vote on it, as Washington state voters did get a chance to vote on it, would say no to that whole idea. And yet California is one of those places where they love every one of these crazy ideas. Well, one of them has to do with the members of the board of directors of institutions within the state of California. And what they've said is you have to have a minimum number of people from underrepresented communities on your board of directors. And they set out specific numbers that companies have to meet. And they set out some really tough punishments if those companies do not meet those goals set by the state. Daniel Ortner joins me now, who's an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Daniel, welcome back to the program, and thanks for the time. But tell me this, is any of this stuff constitutional and legal?
Lars, thanks for having me. No, I don't think it is. I think it's blatantly unconstitutional, to be honest.
Well, so how does California think it can get away with a requirement that says by the end of 2021, every company has to have a minimum of one director from an underrepresented community? And then they define that as somebody who self-identifies as Black, African-American. I guess that's two different categories in California. Hispanic, Latino, two different categories again. Asian, Pacific Islander, Native American, Native Hawaiian, or Alaska Native, or who self-identifies as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. You got to have one, check the box, or we're going to hit you with a $100,000 fine.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I think that it's they're just gambling on the fact that they were gambling on the fact that no one's going to ever challenge this. I think that was, you know, companies are afraid to object to these requirements. We had to fight all the way to the Ninth Circuit to establish that a shareholder or shareholder group could sue because they're the only ones willing to stand up and speak out and fight against this. So I think they're hoping on no one fighting against it. And then the other thing they're saying is, well, there's disparate results, disparate levels of minority representation on boards, but that's not good enough under the Equal Protection Clause. When there's race discrimination, the Supreme Court has been very clear that you need to have compelling evidence of government-sponsored discrimination that the policy is remedying. It's not enough that just generally in society there's some degree somewhere in the ether of disparities. You have to have specific evidence of discrimination on the basis of race by the government. And the state doesn't have that. And they know, I think they know they don't have that. They're doing everything else they can to fight to not have this case be heard in court.
And yet, why wouldn't they want to have it tested? Because I'd actually be curious, Daniel. I don't know if when you go up as the Pacific Legal Foundation, a constitutional attorney against this or in defense of a company's right to choose whoever it chooses to be on its board of directors, I'm curious about what their internal data has said, you know, at the State Assembly in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Did they have any of their attorneys say, by the way, boys and girls, this is not going to go over well when it gets to court?
So a couple of years ago, they enacted a woman quota, which we're also fighting in federal court. And when they enacted that, the legislators, their judicial committee actually said, this is constitutionally suspect. There's not enough evidence for this. But the governor, Governor Brown, when he enacted this in 2018, the woman quota in 2018, he said, I'm not sure if this is constitutional, but because of the need to make a stand against discrimination against women, I'm going to sign it anyway. So they know that this is suspect. I think they're afraid of these challenges, and they're doing everything they can to evade actually facing a court on the merits of these challenges.
I mean, I understand why it's attractive to be on one of these board of directors. And I'll say, Daniel, I always tell my audience if I have a dog in the fight, I've served on a bunch of unpaid boards, but I've never been on full board of directors for a company. But you can make a lot of money, even if you don't go to Ukraine like Joe Biden's son Hunter did and make extraordinary money. For the biggest companies in America, you might make as much as $150,000 a year for showing up for four or five or six board meetings every year. And your only responsibilities were to be familiar with what's going on, show up for the board meeting, your travel and expenses are paid. I mean, it's a sweet deal.
Yeah, that plus benefits, plus stock, it can be very lucrative, as you said.
But how, I guess one of the things I want to ask is less about the constitutionality. But if these companies went out and said, okay, we're just going to comply, because it sounds like none of the companies chose to stand up and object to this, which is why you had to represent shareholders in going against this. If they said, we're going to do this, go find somebody who's Black or says they're Black, and we'll put them on the board. If you're that person, what kind of demeaning piece of garbage is it to say, I got put on the board of directors, the money's really nice, but I'm there because of my skin color? What kind of insulting message is that?
I think it's really patronizing. It inflicts the idea or perpetuates the idea that women or minorities can't make it on their own on their merits, which is not true. The boards are diversifying increasingly. It's just not true that there's this inability of people to get on boards. And I think you're right. Quotas dehumanize people. That's what the Supreme Court has said, is it treats people solely based on their group identity, solely based on their skin color or their sex or their sexual orientation. It's the only reason you're included or excluded. And that's demeaning. It's contrary to the Constitution, because the Constitution guarantees equality under the law. And that means you're not judged based on your skin color, but on the content of your character, based on your individual attributes and your skills, not as just based on your identity. And so it's, I think, demeaning, it's insulting, and it's unconstitutional.
Well, and Daniel, I don't know if you remember this guy, but as far as I'm concerned, he was the most notorious member of boards of directors that I knew back in the '90s. I didn't know him, but Vernon Jordan, I think it was on, I think he was on 10 different boards of directors. And if you say, geez, if he's pulling down $100,000 from each one of those spots, he's making some really good money for just showing up for meetings and giving his opinion. He was the guy who famously tried to bail out Bill Clinton by finding a paying gig for Monica Lewinsky, you know, who was the president's girlfriend at the time. And I remember reading he's on 10 boards of directors. And I thought, all this guy does is get on airplanes and fly around the country and show up at board meetings and stay in nice hotels and go to nice dinners and collect a gigantic paycheck. It's a sweet deal. And Vernon Jordan was black, but he was a smart guy. A lot of companies sought him out because they thought he gave them really good advice. Wouldn't that be the better way to get to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. What we need is opportunity for everyone. We don't need the government stepping in and mandating discrimination, which is what's happening here. The state is saying, new companies, if you're headquartered in California, you're going to have to discriminate. You have to take race into account. You have to take sex into account. You have to take orientation into account. That's not the role, the proper role of the government to mandate.
No, it's not at all. And I guess I think there's a better way to do this. I hope that California gets shot down in court. How soon is this thing going to come to an actual decision?
We're hoping it'll hopefully move quickly, because we've already, in this other women quota lawsuit, gotten a lot of the groundwork there. And so I think it'll move quickly towards a discovery and to decide the case. Not hard to know exactly how long it'll take.
Hey, Daniel, are any other...
The voters in California rejected affirmative action as well. So it's not just the voters have said no to these kinds of policies, and yet the state continues to do this.
Are there any other states that are going this direction, or are they all just going to stand back and watch how bad California crashes and burns?
You know, Oregon has a requirement there's no teeth to it, but they have a requirement. Other states have considered it, Illinois, New York. They haven't enacted it yet. I think if this law doesn't get struck down, it's only a matter of time, and it's a matter of time before California expands this to not publicly traded companies, and then to nonprofits, to all kinds of businesses. I think they're going to continue to expand this if it's not stopped.
Daniel, keep up the good work. That's Daniel Ortner from the Pacific Legal Foundation. Anybody who's a naysayer who thinks those quotas are appropriate, I'd be glad to take your call. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Up in Seattle, just like in Portland, they give incredible latitude to the concrete campers. You know, the mostly drug addicted or booze addicted people who live in tents, who live on sidewalks, who live in little shanty towns that they built up. Well, Como reports that Jenny Durkin is now optimistically talking about an actual timeline for the homeless situation at Ballard Commons School and Park to be resolved. Now, Tina and I, when we visited Seattle, have actually driven past this mess. As for Ballard Commons, there are still more than a dozen tents on the lawn, but just a few weeks ago, there were 50, so they may be headed in the right direction. Hey, look, there are only a dozen tents out there instead of 50. We're making progress. Holy cannoli. Durkin did not make any promises or get into details about how she plans to clear the encampment, but again, she said she's saying she's hopeful. Yeah, like my father-in-law says, hope in one hand and spit in the other one and see which one fills up first. To your calls now. Let's go to Tristan. Hey, Tristan, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, honored to speak to you. I just wanted to add to the discussion on what California is trying to do. And I You know, I'm not sure if there's a similarity here, but I at least just wanted to, you know, again, just kind of add to the discussion. Out here in Washington, you've got Hanford, right? And they get a lot of government money, and they're obligated to fund certain minority groups, whether it be disadvantaged, racial, or women-owned groups. So I kind of feel like there's already a segue for California to kind of do some of this, no?
I agree with you, Tristan. And I think all these programs are destructive, okay? Not because I don't think that people who are Black or Hispanic or female-owned companies should not have success. But when you get your success by doing it, I'll go back almost 10 years to a story that was done by the Seattle Times. You know, the Daily Fish Wrapper occasionally makes a point. Usually they don't do it on purpose. In this case, they did it accidentally. They were talking about a man who lived in Seattle, and he was a Black citizen. And he had started, he got into electrical contracting, which is a good business. It pays well by all accounts. And they talked about how he had had such a successful career. And here's what they said. This is how the fish wrapper doesn't even know what it's doing. Because they said he's had a successful career because when he first started, there weren't a lot of Black electricians or Black electrical contracting companies. So the city of Seattle had set up a special program where certain government contracts could only be given to a Black-owned business. So he got into a lot of these contracts. Now, the intent was, it was like priming the pump. If he gets a few contracts from the government, he'll get up, he'll get operating, he'll get his crew going, and then he'll be able to go and get other jobs, right? The article actually said the man went through his entire 30 years in business without ever taking a contract outside of the set-asides. And you say, well, hold on, how is that successful? If the idea was that, you know, the businesses maybe over the last half century, three quarters century have locked certain people out. That's probably true. It's certainly true. And you say, so we need to give them a leg in, you know, a foot in the door. So you give them a foot in the door and they say, hey, the foot in the door pays really well. I think I'll just stick with this. How demeaning is that? And how damaging is that to say to Black Americans, the only way you can make it is if we actually set aside contracts and say these are for you because you can't possibly go out and compete on your own.
Right.
It's a sad situation. Tristan, thank you very much. But yes, the set-asides, they're wrong. They ought to be challenged, and nobody seems to want to do it. Let's go to Roy. Hey, Roy, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Okay, I just have a question.
Okay.
Which you might be able to answer easily.
I'll try.
Who is in charge of the HIPAA laws?
The HIPAA laws were passed by the federal government, and they only apply to healthcare institutions. Whether you like it or not, that is what the law says.
No, I understand that, but who enforces them?
The federal government, for the most part.
And why? Okay, well, that answered that question.
Yeah.
Why,
it's a federal law. The federal law. The federal government enforces.
Why are they not going after these people?
Going after which people?
No.
Which people?
The ones who are trying to lock down the country.
If you're talking about the governors,
got to show. Yes.
Because the Biden administration buys into the idea that you must be vaxxed and that we're going to make you do it if you won't do it voluntarily. The Biden administration and the DOJ will not go after enforcing HIPAA laws if they're going to run counter to what Joe Biden wants. And that's the way, or Joe Biden's handlers, I guess. Let's go to Rob. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yes, hey, Lars. I have a couple of questions.
I'll do my best.
Vaccine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I'll do my best. Go ahead. What's your question?
Certainly. I can't say against my will, but I got a vaccine, you know, what has it been, almost a year now ago, and we were touted and sold that they were, you know, their effectiveness was, I believe, one was 98%, one was 92%, and one was 86%, and I got vaccinated so I could visit my elderly folks in elderly care, and, you know, unknowing that it was 98%, that's effective, so you will not get the vaccine, or so you won't get COVID, but now look at it today, and it's clearly not what it was touted as initially was a prevent.
It's, you know what, Rob, I think I've had people say, Lars, you shouldn't say vaccine at all anymore. I have to, if we're going to have a conversation and we know what we're talking about, right? It'd be like talking about guns without saying the words pistol and rifle, but it's a symptom suppressor. It at best suppresses the symptoms. It does not keep you from getting it or getting sick from it or transmitting it to somebody else or even in some cases dying from it. You've got the Lars Larson Show.